What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside Graham Barfield. Fabs is off this week, so it's just us holding down the fort for now.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun week.
Yeah, it should be fun. It's June. I kept saying it's May, but now we're past May. We're into June. This is I feel like this is the last full month of NFL summer. Because once we get to like mid-July, then training camps are kind of starting up again. So like everybody else, I always feel weird because everybody else is like just getting ready for summer and 4th of July hits and most people are like, yeah, it's summer vacation. For us, it's like, yeah, summer's kind of over now.
Yeah, summer usually ends for me like mid-July. That's usually when we get locked in here. Yeah. So I'm going to enjoy the last like couple weeks of freedom.
Right, exactly. It also, and you know, this is me, my weather complaints living in Los Angeles. Like, you know, our NFL summer happens when it's June gloom. So like we don't get a lot of sun. But yeah. Then again, we get sun, what, 300 days a year, so I can't complain too much about it. Plenty to talk about. You know, we're going to do Todd Gurley watch because that continues to be one of the more compelling fantasy stories of the offseason. We'll talk some game shows because the Jeopardy guy finally lost. So we'll talk a little bit about that and plenty of other stuff to talk about. But before we do any of that, let's, as we always do, go behind the glass and talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's up?
I'm just glad this episode's fully about Daniel Jones being the number one dual threat after his massive run on the Giants OTAs.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. And, like, I mean, okay, so as our, you know, Giants fan representative here, like, I mean, how do you feel? Is this... Because I didn't know this about Dan. I didn't know that he was supposed to be, you know, some super mobile quarterback. Like,
you
is
me
this
both.
A thing?
Yeah. I just thought they're like, okay, he's the Eli clone. Like, stand in the pocket, you know, make the throw. Like, if it's a clean pocket, he'll be great. And then it's like, oh, everyone reminds you. He's like, oh, he ran like a 4.640, and he's a, you know, a Duke. He had to run around because the offensive line was just absolutely terrible. So if this is the case, I mean, Giants haven't had a mobile quarterback, and I couldn't tell you how long. And to have a guy that could extend a play would be something else, especially with the O-line being better, much improved from last year. So, I mean, what? It's music to my ears.
You're not overseeing Eli just turn into a turtle every time there's pressure in the pocket?
It's so bad. And the bad thing is, too, you know, I know this is just offseason. It's like Marcus just saying it's June. It's early June. Like, it's still really nothing going on. But if he's out playing, I just wish Eli Manning's last name was not Manning, because if he actually truthfully is out playing, him, it's like, just throw him in there. Like, what's the worst that could happen? Are you going to win the Super Bowl this year anyway? Probably not. So, like, let's see what the kid has, but I don't think we're going to have to see that. So
I'm trying to think of the last kind of mobile Giants quarterback, and the only name coming up for me is, like, Jeff Hostetler.
Right, and that's before my time.
That's like, that's a long time.
What's funny is they've their backup quarterbacks have been more mobile than Eli, but they don't ever play.
They never get on the
field. Eli's just Iron Man, so they haven't even taken him out. So they're like, okay, well, we need a guy who's mobile as a backup who never ever seen the field.
So anyway, that I thought that was funny watching, you know, the Daniel Jones excitement happen on Twitter a day or two ago. We'll see what happens with that, but. It's probably going to be Eli unless something, you know, major happens in the next, you know, month or so. I can't imagine Daniel Jones is going to be starting. So anyway, got plenty to talk about. In the meantime, let's do some news.
Let's do the news.
News from Baltimore. Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Baltimore Ravens, says Lamar Jackson will run less in 2019, basically saying that that's not what this offense is about. I know that he has been working on his accuracy and trying to connect better with his receivers. There's a new offense, all this sort of thing there. But, I mean, Graham, we showed up for the running ability. Like, if he's not running as much... I mean, unless he takes huge steps forward in his passing ability, suddenly that takes a lot away from his game.
Yeah, they can say that all they want. But, he's going to run quite a bit. I do think there's a chance that he won't run like 17. He averaged 17 rushing attempts per start last season. Mm-hmm. 147 rushing attempts total. That was the most a quarterback has ever had in a single season, which is kind of remarkable, even though he only started 7 games.
Right.
I think he's going to shatter some rushing attempts totals this year, but I don't expect 17 carries per game. That is a bit much, and that's kind of putting him a little bit too much in harm's way. But, They cannot take that off the field.
They can't. I mean, they just one because it's something else the defense has to pay attention to. So you know you can't completely take that away from him. But you know I'm curious to see how this works out. I mean, Lamar, I know we all loved him last year. We were excited about his possibilities. I feel like we haven't talked quite as much about him, especially now that you know Kyler Murray has kind of become the new hotness there. I mean, I would imagine what he's kind of a QB2 at this point.
I think because Kyler has become this kind of lightning rod of, I guess, fun hype this offseason.
Right.
Lamar's kind of fallen by the wayside. Lamar Jackson is...
He's like old news now.
I mean, he's like the floor for Kyler Murray, I think, of what people are expecting this year. I'm still taking Lamar Jackson quite often.
Yeah.
Late in drafts just because of that rushing upside. It's just so sexy. I will say every year we hear... maybe this year will be a little bit different with Cam, but like every year in the offseason, we would hear like, "Oh, Cam Newton's going to rush less," and he never once did. Just because that's what these guys do is like maybe they're not the most accurate quarterbacks, but they provide so much value on the ground that's underrated. They just can't get away from that.
Well, and I also think that when you can run the football the way those guys can, it sort of balances out the accuracy Absolutely. Issue because suddenly as a defender. You do have to keep an eye on the quarterback a little bit, so you maybe aren't as close to the receiver as you would normally be. So I think that sort of opens up maybe some more windows. So, we'll see what happens with Lamar. You know, again, this is also coming from the owner. This is not coming from the head coach or the offensive coordinator. So I'm sure
grains of salt.
I'm sure Steve Bisciotti would love to protect his investment in Lamar Jackson and not get him hurt. But I think you know, if it comes down to you know needing some yards and some production. John Harbaugh will kind of let the reins loose a little bit. Freddie Kitchens says Odell Beckham missed a lot by not being in OTAs. I only put this in here, you know, not because it's like, you know, I'm not big on the, you know, so-and-so didn't show up to voluntary mini camps or whatever. I mean, it is voluntary. But you got this, you got Jarvis Landry, who is banged up a little bit. Now you've got Duke Johnson, you know, not demanding a trade, but just kind of saying, hey, you know, I'd like to go somewhere else. And Baker Mayfield now taking shots at him. It's only June, I know, but this would be a lot of disarray around the Browns offense right now.
I used to have a baseball coach who we had voluntary workouts, right?
Mm.
But we all called them voluntary workouts because if you didn't show up, I mean, you were going to get called out for it. And it seems like, obviously, the NFL is kind of been that way too. Mm-hmm. I'm the same way with you. It's like if these guys are taking care of their bodies and doing their own training regimens like Le'Veon Bell did too, it's like really who cares?
Right.
I mean these guys are in top physical condition pretty much all year round. But the difference is obviously Odell's on a new team and he has a new offense to learn, but still I don't really care.
I mean one, and I think somebody I don't remember who it was on Twitter sort of made the point that, you know, part of the reason that Odell was available for the Browns to go out and get was because he was sort of the guy that didn't show up to OTAs and, you know, made his other team upset.
He's always done this.
He's always been this guy. So why all of a sudden he was going to change now, I'm not really sure. And you know, look, maybe this isn't a big a deal. You know, we're trying to create headlines. We're trying to create stuff to talk about. So I don't know if Freddie Kitchens is really that upset about it or just kind of, you know, saying things or whatever, just kind of speaking his mind a little bit. But I would imagine once we get to training camp and once we get to the preseason, I think things will be fine.
Yeah, you won't hear about this.
I think it'll be okay.
Yeah.
Josh Doctson says he is ready for a, quote, big year in 2019. Simple question. Are we buying it?
I was waiting for a big year in 2017. 2018. No. No, I'm sorry. The Redskins' depth chart right now is just absolutely loaded with receivers. They're mm-hmm. gonna have some major cutdowns here, which Doctson might be one of them.
Yeah, you know, it's just the wide receivers there just never really popped. I think the way we really wanted them to, and Doctson was probably chief among those guys. I also going into the season. Are we leaning toward Dwayne Haskins as the starting quarterback there? Will there be a competition? I mean, who do you expect to see starting at quarterback?
I think Case will start week one, but I definitely think Dwayne's going to really push him. Regardless, though, man, like it's really hard to find anyone on this team for fantasy to be super, super invested in.
Yeah.
Pretty much any point in the draft. I mean, it's really hard to hammer Darius Geis coming off of his knee injuries and never playing a snap in the NFL. Jordan Reed has never been a a bastion of health in his career.
Last year he was, but he didn't produce.
Yeah, and then he got hurt at the end of the year. And then they have all these receivers that we have no idea what to do with. So I'm kind of throwing my hands up. It's almost like, I know we talked never Dolphins earlier this year, but it might be never Redskins.
I mean, you're right. They're just so hard to kind of figure out. Although Adrian Peterson, who is always great for a preseason quote that you know makes you scratch your head, says he is aiming for 2,000 yards. This year.
Does he mean he is aiming for 2,000 yards or the Redskins offense and total 2,000 yards?
The quote is, I got my mark set at 2,000 yards. I've always had it set at that mark since I stepped into the league, so that's where it's at. Most importantly, I just want to contribute to the team and help this team win a championship.
I wish him luck.
I do too. I mean, look, I will say that he exceeded my expectations last year, went over 1,000 yards, 7 touchdowns. Admittedly, they sort of came in chunks. And then he kind of faded a little bit. But look, in the past, I'd say 5 years ago, I'd be like, hey, man, this might be something. Right now, with him at 34 years old, I'm not really buying it.
Nah.
Roger Goodell says he wants to shorten the preseason. I know a lot of fans are in favor of it. I think there is still value in maybe not 4 games, but at least 3 games. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, in fantasy, we started using the preseason a while ago to sort of evaluate where teams are, evaluate who's getting reps, and just sort of ability. I would think that for what we do, a shortened preseason kind of hurts a little bit.
It'll depend on how much they eventually do cut it down, because I do agree. I think 4 is a bit too much. That 4th preseason game just ends up being totally meaningless every single year.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I use the preseason differently just to follow snap counts and actually see who's physically on the field. And I mean, we get so much, we're inundated with so much coach speak in the off season. It's so nice and refreshing to actually be able to see how these players are being used and where they're actually at on the depth chart in the preseason. But as long as we get like at least 2 solid games, I think it'll be fine. But every team is different, though. I mean, the Rams are probably, as long as Sean McVay is the coach there,
never going to play their starters.
Every team is a little bit different, and I think we're going to start seeing teams approach the preseason differently once they do cut it back from 4 to, most likely, I think it'll be 3 games.
I would think 3. Like, I can't imagine.
To start.
I can't imagine they cut it just to 2, because I do think coaches still also want a couple of those games to evaluate talent, to make cuts, that sort of thing.
They're not only figuring out how to make cuts, but they're trying to figure out who they're going to carry onto their practice squad each year, who they're going to potentially bring back for another year. It's definitely a big evaluation period for them. And I think cutting it back from 4 to 3 makes sense for them too. Cause I mean, they get one extra I would hope they would get one extra week of practice.
I would think, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see. I thought it was just interesting. I know like it doesn't have an immediate fantasy impact, but there will be some ripple effect, I think, if there are fewer games, fewer opportunities to see some of these guys, especially when you're talking about guys a little bit further down on the depth chart. Last bit of news, Carson Palmer is going to the Cardinals Ring of Honor. So that just made me think of our consistent question. Would Carson Palmer be a fantasy Ring of Honor quarterback? I would lean toward no. Nah. I feel like he had a couple of really nice years, but not the sustained period of excellence that would kind of get him amongst the fantasy elite. That's just my first take on it.
Yeah, I mean, he spent 5 years in Arizona and only played all 16 games, basically played a full slate of games 3 times, 3 of those 5 years. Mm-hmm. Is that it? I guess that's enough to get into a Ring of Honor now in the NFL.
Yes.
I was talking about this with Rank yesterday. It's like, if Kyler Murray wins 8 games this year, is he just automatically in the Ring of Honor in Arizona? They just don't have enough players, I guess, to put in the Ring of Honor.
I mean, I guess. I mean, they're waiting for the day Larry Fitzgerald, the moment he retires, he's going to just walk right into there. Yeah. I guess not. And I did think about that. That's... It does seem like he wasn't really there long enough to be in there, but I don't know.
They almost won the Super Bowl, though. I mean, they were so close in 2015.
Which was sort of odd. Like, I just couldn't imagine. Like, man, this team was really... There were a couple times in my life where I'm like, the Arizona Cardinals might be Super Bowl champions. Were it not for a Santonio Holmes amazing toe tap in the corner, they would have been Super Bowl champions.
They could have beaten Denver in 2015, too. Cam was just unstoppable that year.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that was a phenomenal year for Cam Newton, and so there you go. So, Carson Palmer, not in the fantasy Ring of Honor. There you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
was the news.
All right, it's time for Todd Gurley Watch, because, I mean, look, this is the story that kind of just keeps on unfolding. And I said this before, and we all, I kind of think, feel the same way. We're never going to know 100% how this plays out until we get to week one and we start to see. And even then, it may be a couple of weeks into the season until we kind of figure out exactly how Sean McVay is going to use him. But the latest report via Ian Rappaport is that folks in LA are sort of expecting that Gurley is not going to be the bell cow going forward. He is not going to be the guy that you just load up with touches, that he is going to be he won't be the center of the offense the way he has been the last couple of years. And, you know, a lot of it is the injuries, the workload he's had, just all the things sort of kind of coming together. Now, in response, Gurley says he's planning to play a little bit closer to 218 pounds. He wants to lose some weight to kind of help himself stay healthier, stay a little more fresh throughout the season. Right now, his ADP on Fantasy Football Calculator, 12-team drafts, 1.09, so back half of the first round. I know, Graham, you said you were kind of looking at him in the second round. Do we think that number, that 109, goes up or down as we get closer to the season?
I haven't been interested in taking Gurley in the first round all offseason. It's now getting the point too. I don't know if he's necessarily even worth a second rounder.
Wow.
I mean, it's look, we were buying Todd Gurley year over year just because obviously he's awesome. But most importantly is that role in the offense.
And right.
If he's going to be cut back from an 80% snap share, seeing 70 to 80% of the team's carries, being heavily involved in the passing game, I think it's time to maybe reevaluate Gurley as an RB1. I was on a show with Matt Kelly, goes by Fantasy Mention on Twitter last week, and he said he's taking Gurley after Nick Chubb. And I at the time, 10 days ago, I thought that was a little too hot, but thinking about it now and hearing some more of these reports that, you know, Gurley's not showing up to OTAs, obviously wasn't surprising, but hearing actual news reports that he's not going to be their bell cow, which is what we've kind of been assuming on this show for a couple months, it's really hard to click that button. It's really, really hard to click that button. And I think once we get closer to the preseason, and Darrell Henderson maybe starts ripping off a few runs, those ADPs are going to get even closer, I think.
Well, and right now, Henderson is at 8.05. And, you know, as much as people have debated where Gurley should be drafted, I feel like there's just as much debate about what to do with Henderson, because, you know, I think the assumption is that he is the guy right behind Todd Gurley on the depth chart, but I mean, there's still Malcolm Brown there. There's still John Kelly there. There are other options there if Sean McVay decides to go that direction. And so then the question becomes, well, okay, we don't 100% know what Gurley's situation is. We think we do. We are certainly speculating about it. We also don't know what the depth chart is going to be. Is eighth round too rich for Darrell Henderson right now?
I respect Fantasy Football Calculator's ADP, but he's going in the sixth, seventh round now.
I mean,
in a lot of the drafts that I've been,
I think in a lot of the industry drafts, a lot of the expert drafts, he probably is. And I'm curious whether or not, you know, because I feel like in a lot of ways we sort of set the tone for how things go, and then in a month or two, like, I think the rest of the world sort of follows along. And so I'm just curious whether or not when we get to August, you know, will your regular fantasy leagues be picking him up in the sixth?
Here's the question. I think it comes down to is, like, would you rather have Lamar Miller in the sixth round or Darrell Henderson?
I mean, in theory, Miller, because he's the starter.
But I guess does Lamar Miller have the ability to win you your league? Darrell Henderson, I think it's pretty clear Darrell Henderson does.
Right.
Todd Gurley is clear. If he is obviously not 100%. I don't know, man. I think I've been pretty adamant about Gurley.
No, I think you've been very consistent.
My thing with Henderson this year is I do think there's going to get to a point where he might get priced out. But if he's still going in that range where it's like Lamar Miller versus Darrell Henderson, like, we know Lamar Miller is not going to help you win your league. Like, he'll be a consistent RB2 flex play, but
right.
Darrell Henderson has league winning upside.
Now the other part of this, though, that I don't think we've talked about quite as much is, what does this mean overall for the Rams offense? I mean, because Gurley was the catalyst for so much of what they did, I mean, even, you know, with all the numbers that, you know, Robert Woods and Brandon Cooks and those guys put up, so much of it still funneled through And we saw it in the Super Bowl. We saw it even in the NFC Championship game to a point. That offense just wasn't quite the same when Gurley wasn't getting the looks and getting the touches. Sure, Darrell Henderson may be great, at least at the start. We don't expect him to be what Todd Gurley was. I have to think this has some sort of impact on Jared Goff and on those wide receivers if defenses aren't necessarily shifting so much of their focus to Todd Gurley.
Actually, I think the bigger injury question mark for the Rams this offseason, as long as in terms of just their efficiency, is Cooper Kupp. Mm-hmm. I think getting Cooper Kupp is getting back Kupp for Goff and for Cooks off the top. Being able to take the top off the defense is just huge for them. I mean, Todd Gurley's awesome, man. And he has been the most consistent fantasy back for two, three straight years now. But having a bone-on-bone knee at basically 25 years old and all the other ancillary factors, we saw what C.J. Anderson did in that offense just on the ground in a few starts. I don't necessarily think they're going to miss too much on the ground. Maybe right. As a receiver, mm-hmm. Todd Gurley has become an excellent receiver. Maybe they'll miss him in their screen game early on, but Darrell Henderson flashed there too, man.
Yeah.
I hope Gurley can come back and give us one more year of fantasy excellence, but it's very, very, very hard to hang your hat on that right now.
Yeah. I also think, you know, and we've kind of touched on this before, and this is maybe less from a fantasy perspective, but more of just a actual NFL team building perspective. I think what we've seen with Gurley is what we're going to see with a lot of running backs. And this is, you know, I guess this is sort of the basis of the running backs don't matter argument, is the fact that you have this guy who is extremely, supremely talented, and the Rams have gotten their money's worth basically out of him, and they have used him. Now, mind you, they had to pay him a big contract to kind of keep him around, but I think, you know, if you are, for instance, Saquon Barkley, I think you got to kind of look at Todd Gurley's situation and be like, man, could this be my future, where the Giants are going to just use me up as much as possible?
And Saquon said, I think last week, at the end of last week, he's preparing for just a massive workload, but I mean, he is going to probably push for 380 to 400 touches this year, Barkley.
Oh, yeah, I would think so.
Gurley's contract, man, like, he is just stacking paper right now.
Oh, of course.
The Rams cannot get out from under his contract for another two seasons. If he cannot provide, obviously, I think the bell cow role is kind of out for right now, barring a miracle. I mean, if he can't provide any, you know, 50 to 60% snap share of the next couple of years, that's going to look like a very, very bad contract for a team that's definitely paid some high price contracts in the past couple of years.
It's going to look worse if they don't win a Super Bowl in that time frame. You know, had they won the Super Bowl last year, I think people will look and say, yeah, okay, you're going to be hamstrung for a couple of years with this contract, but you know what? You got a title, and so maybe that makes it worth it. But if, you know, they went all in, you know, with a lot of these big contracts, and if they don't ever get a title to show for it, then I think people will criticize them for that.
At the time, I did not like the deal just because it was a humongous deal for a running back, and now it looks even worse because Gurley is fortunately, his knee's toast, man.
The decline comes swiftly. Yeah.
It always does with running backs.
Always does.
Running
backs and quarterbacks tend to just fall off.
They do. It's like receivers have this like kind of nice curve where they come back down. You're like, okay, he's clearly lost his step, but he can still catch balls. With right. running backs, it's like they just hit a wall.
That's it.
They hit a wall and that's it.
Well, even with wide receivers, I think there are ways to sort of reinvent yourself. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald, I think, is a great example of that. He has reinvented himself, you know, after we thought, you know what, he's done, it's time, and he has still been able to hold on and be productive. It's just so much harder at that running back spot.
There's no way to reinvent yourself from slamming into 300-pound defensive linemen.
That is kind of a...
That's kind of hard, right?
It's kind of a dead-end career opportunity at some point. So, we will certainly, I think, continue this Todd Gurley watch as things go along, as we get closer to training camp. Now, mind you, again, we may not see him in training camp, and we likely won't see him at all in the preseason. So it will just be people continuing to speculate. And I'm just going to be curious to keep an eye on where he gets drafted, because I just imagine the swing will be very wild. The highs and lows of where people are taking him will be very, very wild.
He still goes in the first round in a few drafts that I've done.
Oh, yeah, sure,
I've seen
does.
Him fall into the second round. It comes down to your risk tolerance.
Yeah. Your level of confidence with drafting Todd Gurley. So there it is. So we don't have Game of Thrones stuff to talk about anymore because that has gone bye-bye, and we have yet to settle on a show that I think we all want to watch and talk about on a weekly basis. But the one thing that was on TV that everybody sort of paid attention to, James Holzhauer, who had his incredible winning streak on Jeopardy, it's done. In fact, it started leaking early the day that the show aired. The episode was taped months ago because Jeopardy is taped well in advance, and then they roll out the episodes, bit by bit. So obviously, Holzhauer himself knew that it was over. The rest of the world started to find out because it was leaked, partially because apparently a station in Alabama, yeah. I think it is.
Yeah, there was like four markets in the entire country, and like Rovell happened to like know, and he leaked it, and it was like, well, it's leaked in four markets, and people were like, yeah, but there's like 45
the
other states.
Yeah. So like somewhere in Alabama shows it at like 9:30 in the morning or something like that. Yeah, that's bizarre.
By the way, isn't that the craziest thing that Jeopardy is on a different time in like every single state,
right?
Like every single city within states? It's insane.
I never knew that.
I didn't really until this. I just thought it was like a 7 o'clock,
exactly.
7 p.m. turn
I knew
on.
Some places are like, okay, they do Jeopardy first, then Wheel of Fortune. Some places do Wheel of Fortune first, then Jeopardy. But then other places like, no, it's a morning show for us. And I'm just like,
I can't imagine watching Jeopardy in the morning.
Waking up to Alex Trebek.
Right. My brain, it's a smart person show. Like, my brain's not really awake enough to do Jeopardy in the morning. Okay. So, but anyway, the streak is over. It sort of got leaked. The final tally on Holzhauer's time on the show, a 32-game winning streak, second all-time to Ken Jennings, who was, I think, at 74. So he didn't even get, this is sort of like in baseball when somebody has like a 20-game hit streak and everybody's like, yeah, whatever,
they're
going
to catch Joe D.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah, come on, whatever. Anyway, 2,464,216. Second all time to Ken Jennings. I think he was about right around $50,000 short.
Yeah. I think it was like 30 grand. Yeah.
Was it even that? Okay.
He was close.
Yeah. So that was a lot closer. Set the single game record with $131,127. And he has the top 16 single day scores and 23 of the top 27.
Man.
He's kind of the Steph Curry of Jeopardy, right? He like changed the game. Absolutely. So it just made me think, though. I mean, if you guys were going on a game show, which is there one out there that you look at and you're like, yeah, I would dominate. I would totally, I feel like all sports Jeopardy, we would all be like, hey, yeah, I could do pretty well. But like, I don't know.
There's two. I'm not sure if I would. In my dumb brain, I think I would dominate because I think if I like set my mind to it and train for it. But I happen to love American Ninja Warrior, Ninja Warrior. But obviously the American one got really popular in this country now too. And it's like I love the fact that like it's just you have it. It's just you and the course, and I'm like, it's styrofoam, and you could sometimes, like, the fear of falling. I watch it constantly. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if I set aside, like, half a year just to train for that, I feel like I would be okay. The other one is an older one, but I feel like the adrenaline rush would make you want to do it and just see other people's reactions is Fear Factor.
Yeah. Oh, Fear Factor I think I could do.
Yeah.
I mean, because, like...
That's the one I was thinking about. And if Joe Rogan runs it, then
that's
I'm all
the
in.
Thing, too. Partially,
if Rogan's running it.
And then just to see like other people like scream, we have to eat spiders. And
like,
crap.
I feel like the eating thing, like, I could psych my mind up to do the eating stuff. It's like, whatever, man, there's money involved. Like, let's go. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I could do that. We have an inn at Ninja Warrior with our pal Akbar Bajabiamila being one of the hosts there. The thing about that show that makes me feel better. It's because, like, when you see the people who actually run through the course, you're like, man, that's tough. It's when they have, like, the people who, like, fall off in the first, like, the first obstacle. You're like, oh, okay. That makes me feel better about myself.
That show is the best at giving you, like, a 12-minute documentary, like, a mini documentary on the person, their life, like, their back, they're done, and then, like, 4.5 seconds, and they slip and fall.
Right.
And it's gone. Like, right in the water, and it's over with. And that goes, like, all right, next contestant.
Yeah.
Like, it's so funny.
I always, because I used to try to guess. I'm like, oh, wow, they did a whole package on this person. Yeah. Like, he must go really far. And then, no, he's, like, in the water immediately. I'm like, oh, okay, so much for that. I know for me... And this goes back to being a kid. Like, I'm old enough to remember me and my best friend thought we would just rule the world on Double Dare. Because all the trivia questions were pretty basic. And, after you watch it so many times, you see the obstacles, you're like, okay, you kind of create a strategy in your head. Now, obviously, it's a little bit different when you're actually on the show and you actually have to do it. But we thought for sure at 12 years old that we were going to take home. I don't even know how much money it was. It was probably like $500 because they were little kids. But we thought for sure we were going to just destroy that show. That's all.
Could we cheat and lie and just say, like, Sports Jeopardy for us?
Sports Jeopardy, yeah. Sure.
My old roommate actually almost won, and he gave me some inside info on it, and, like, how the clicker is so delayed.
Right.
You don't understand that. So the one other guy that beat him was clicking, but he was close. And he was like, I'm in my room, my old roommate, he knows everything about the weirdest sports. And Sports Jeopardy, most of the time, like 3/4 of the time, would have a weird Final Jeopardy question. Mm-hmm. So he's like, well, even if I'm this close, this guy's not going to know, you know, indoor soccer or like weird, like high lie. Like he knows everything. And it ended up being like a very generic question. He beat him with the click. Like he beat him with the betting amount because he knew it, whatever. So it, like, I would like that, but I don't like, I want my skills to speak for themselves, which is why I like the Fear Factor American Ninja Warrior. Right. I don't want like a Deal or No Deal when they just pick it for you, or yeah, like the clicker malfunctioning. Like I don't want to lose because of that. So I'd be afraid of those other shows.
Yeah. I know the clicker thing on Jeopardy is, I think, one of the underrated parts of the show. I mean, you know, so obviously Holzhauer was smart. He had a lot of knowledge, but he also was quick on the buzzer too. And that's what held. I mean, you can know all the things in the world, but if you can't buzz in time, it doesn't really matter.
Were you rooting for him?
I was just, I don't think I rooted for or against him. I was just more watching it as a curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of like, just sort of sitting and amazed at the depth of knowledge, sure, that he had. I mean, you know, the breadth of categories and everything. And just the fact that he changed the way the game was played by starting with the big money questions first, and then literally doubling, going, like his daily doubles were true daily doubles, you know? So that to me was just sort of, I didn't care whether he won or lost. I was just more watching it for curiosity.
Right. I think the more captivating story is that he came from a gambling and fantasy background. Literally said like a lot of the inspiration from his streak came from just playing fantasy sports, which is kind of amazing.
Right.
And the way he played so aggressively, I just don't think many in Jeopardy had thought to do it. And I think it's funny, too. I saw some people, like, get angry that he came in and had this, like, kind of contrarian approach to playing Jeopardy. It's like, if you're getting mad about the way somebody's playing Jeopardy, you've got way too much time.
You
got
to get a life at this point.
Right. Yeah.
I do think, though, people are going to start playing like that, sure, now. You know, now that we've, sure, seen it and we've seen how successful it can be. Now, obviously, you have to be as smart as he is. But I think you're going to see more people start with the big money questions and try to work from there. Because what was interesting about it to me, though, is that also the few times when he maybe get an answer wrong, I think I saw once where he you know, doubled up on a daily double, got it wrong, lost everything, and he just kind of shook it off because it's like, whatever, I'm gonna get it right back.
Right. That's what I loved about it. He literally is a game changer. He is like Lawrence Taylor. Now you're like, okay, now I need to draft a left tackle to protect my blind. So like, he literally changed the whole game of Jeopardy, which is why people who are rooting against him, I didn't get, because I'm like, well, Jeopardy's on every day of the week, and it's the same kind of boring. Like, right, you have three mediocre guys, and like one of them wins, and it's like not an impressive amount, and like life goes on. But this guy he like sparked interest for, you know, a period of time.
Yeah.
I was like actually at the gym next to a guy when the minute he lost, and I caught the Final Jeopardy question, and he started like Tiger Woods like fist pumping and cheering that he lost, and people turned around looking at him, and I was like, yeah, man, and he was like clapping. I was like, you're this happy this guy lost the one interesting Jeopardy guy since like Ken Jennings, and you're gonna root against him?
Because
like,
we're gonna go back to not watching Jeopardy now.
Exactly. Yeah.
I heard that their ratings had spiked, like they had an 11-year ratings high or something, because
I think the day that he lost, I mean, obviously a lot of people knew it in advance, but the day that he lost, I think it tied the NBA Finals game that night for ratings. And look, you know, I'm a Warriors fan, so I watched that, the NBA game, but look, I get it, man. The NBA Finals are on every year. Like, how often are you going to see a guy take a run like this on Jeopardy? So, I mean, that made sense to me. The other question is, and I know he's talked about maybe wanting to work in pro sports, work in front offices.
Some baseball team's going to hire him.
I think the Washington Post did a survey where they asked a lot of front offices in Major League Baseball, you know, would he be welcome there? And it was like an unequivocal yes, absolutely. You know, I think somebody said, I think Billy Beane said maybe the gambling background might scare people, but generally, like, not enough to not...
Oh, yeah.
Give him a shot.
There'll be a money ball, too, with this guy or something.
Yeah, it's got to be. So that leads me to our social poll question for the week. Well, first off, what was our social poll question last week? Was the Game of Thrones spinoff,
the Frasier-like spinoff, yeah. And it was between Grey Worm becomes a pirate, Yara Greyjoy is the cruise ship service, and Miri does the wildlife like conservation trips with guests. And the clear winner. Well, do you guys have any guesses of which one would dominate?
I would guess the Yara Greyjoy cruise ship. Yep. That's okay. My guess.
Well, do you guys agree with that?
Yes. Yeah.
Grey Worm becomes Grey
Worm.
A pirate, 52%.
Wow.
Yara Greyjoy is 25%, second place. Miri, 23%, so only 2% behind that. We did have a good write-in, was a hot pie cooking show.
Yeah, ooh, I saw that one. That was fantastic.
That
yeah. Really, that's really good.
That would be a really good
one. He was like the one side character, not the one, but one ultra like minor character that people just rallied around and love that guy.
Baking with hot pie. Yeah,
that would be pretty good. So the social poll this week, because of James Holzhauer, in honor of him, he had said a few weeks ago, I think on TMZ, that he was like Deshaun Watson because he's a guy who could do it all. So it made me think, which current NFL quarterback could be sort of James Holzhauer, go on Jeopardy and put together a run? So I went through and I pulled out based on some Wonderlic scores. And I know that, you know, look, the Wonderlic, I don't know that it has an impact on actual football, but it is a test about just like esoteric things, which basically is like Jeopardy, right? So I went in and got four guys. Blaine Gabbert, who scored a 42 on the Wonderlic, Carson Wentz, who had a 40, Alex Smith, who also had a 40, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we all know went to Harvard, who had a 48. So those are my four guys. Obviously, if there's anybody out there you guys want to write in as an other, but I think those four guys, Blaine Gabbert, Carson Wentz, Alex Smith, Ryan Fitzpatrick, of the current NFL quarterbacks, which one could be the ultimate Jeopardy champ? You know, sneakily, I put my money on Alex Smith.
Yeah. I did not realize that Blaine, this is blowing my mind, that Blaine Gabbert
scored a 40 on the Wonderlic.
I was just blowing my mind.
I did the same. When I looked at the list, I was like, wow, Blaine Gabbert.
I can't get over it. Like I'm literally stuck on it. I'm like having a brain fart. I originally thought of Fitzpatrick too for this.
He was the first name that came to mind. Yeah.
So we're school snobs.
Of course.
I was thinking that too. I was thinking I would go with Fitzpatrick and then next and then thinking like, okay, who's a quarterback who went to a really good school? I'm like, oh, Stanford. Oh, Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck.
Yeah, he was the guy I'd put out there.
Yeah. I think Alex Smith, he just seems like a sneaky, underrated play there. I mean, sort of like his football career, right? When you like, yeah, you think Alex Smith, and he ends up being better than you anticipate. So that's sort of my guess there. But I'd imagine we'll get some good write-in votes, too.
Yeah, I'll give a quick write-in just because I'm a Notre Dame fan, and he was just drafted in the first round. Jerry Tillery could speak, like, a bunch of languages and took, like, some really difficult classes at Notre Dame and traveled, like, the world and stuff. He's a really, really smart dude.
I would think, especially if you open up, if you open beyond quarterbacks, too, I think you get Tillery, you've got John Urschel, you get the LDT, who's actually an actual doctor.
Right.
Yeah, I think you opening up beyond quarterbacks, you get a whole lot of options too. So, you guys out there, hit us up, vote in the poll. If you got some write-in candidates, we'd love to hear those as well. I think it'll be fun. So, that's it. I think we're done. We're all done. Appreciate it. As always, we appreciate you downloading and listening and participating and playing along. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, to be old and wise, you once had to be young and stupid. We'll see you next week.